Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Arola, and joining us for the first time as co-host on The Damage Report, host, journalist, contributor to TYT, Sharon Reed. Welcome to The Damage Report.
Thanks for having me. I don't know, I'm ready to do some damage.
Well, we mainly just report on it. You know, yeah. We don't want to contribute considering how much is already out there, but no, feel free. We're not interested in protecting the reputations of politicians. So no, feel free to hit them hard. And actually, we're going to be joined by a politician on the show a little bit later on. If you're on the linear platforms or on the podcast, apologies. It's going to take place in the aftermath. So maybe go to the YouTube channel and check it out later on. But anyway, when we launch into the aftermath, primary challenger to Joe Biden, Marianne Williamson, is going to be joining us. We're going to be talking about her bid against Biden, some of the immediate, like just disdainful comments made by Biden allies, how this primary might shake out, and a lot of other related issues. So it should be fun conversation. We were able to speak with Williamson at the beginning of the last presidential race, which obviously was fraught. But anyway, we're gonna touch base with her again and see what's going on in her second run. Along the way, we've got a lot of other stuff we're gonna talk about as well. Lauren Boebert thinks identifying a white supremacist as a white supremacist is uncouth and is gonna be corrected in that assertion. We've got AOC being sued over blocking a right-wing troll, and Jenna Ellis having to admit that she repeatedly lied about incredibly consequential political facts, as well as checking in with the Dominion versus Fox News fallout, a lot of producers at Fox losing faith in the mission of that once highly respected news organization, and a lot of other things besides. Along the way, please hit the like button, share the stream so people know we're live. And if you want to reach out to Sharon or myself with comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Sharon, you ready to start the show?
I'm ready.
Okay, let's jump into it. Bear in mind, before we launch into this, dear viewers, this first block is going to cover some pretty serious dark material. So with that in mind, let's jump into this.
Some officers have demonstrated disrespect for the people they are sworn to protect. Some have videotaped themselves throwing drinks at pedestrians from their cars, insulted people with disabilities, and called black people monkeys, animal, and boy. This conduct is unacceptable.
As of course, Merrick Garland announcing the DOJ releasing a 90-page report summarizing what they've found in their multi-year investigation into Louisville police that was launched in the wake of the tragic killing of Breonna Taylor back in March of 2020. And what they found, as you can already tell from that video, is absolutely devastating. The broad conclusions are incredibly worrying. Some of the specific things that they've uncovered are horrifying. It was pervasive. There were individually horrific acts, and there was a tolerance for discrimination, bias in how policing was done, brutality, insults, racial slurs, pretty much everything you would not want to see in law enforcement was on offer daily with the Louisville police. And we're gonna jump into some of the most individually horrific acts of brutality that you might not already be familiar with. We're gonna turn to that in just a bit. But Sharon, I wanted to start off with you. What do you make of what they found in this investigation of Louisville?
It's sick, you know, dogs biting people after they've already been subdued. The attorney general mentions some of the other things. I will say this, I applaud and appreciate that the system is going to be held in quotes accountable here. But I do think the individuals who conduct and persecute and harm people also. We really did not see that with Breonna Taylor. It's slap on the wrist, so minimal, some receiving awards and praise. And so when the attorney general says the word disrespect, you know, I shouldn't be coming after him when there's so many other people to come after, but I do. It's beyond disrespect. And we need to call it what it is. It is looking at some as subhuman. Although I don't know that animals would be treated the way the police treat some people who happen to be black and brown, disabled, he mentioned. So I have mixed feelings. I want, John, the system held accountable, but I want to see the mugshots and the perp walks. And in this case, I am for more policing of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think hopefully for most people, we're way beyond anybody like buying this few bad apples thing or whatever.
Thank you.
But often, like we have this investigation. So I have some mixed feelings. I don't know if they're the exact same as yours, but it's like, oh good. So now we have an administration that will actually launch these sorts of investigations. Under Trump, this would be either quashed or like stopped in its infancy. They weren't interested for 4 years in looking into these sorts of abuses. But then like you have the investigation. Okay, good. That's good. And they found a lot of this stuff, which is absolutely awful. And like now I'm wondering, so good, they'll get rid of some of those cops and who will replace them? And that's Louisville, one individual spot. Just yesterday on the Young Turks, we were talking about some of the new reporting on gangs in the LA Sheriff's Office. And it's just like every place across all of these states, across literally decades. It is like the word systemic is too small at a certain point. Like the size of the issue that we face, the difficulty in even trying to conceive of how you would reform something that is so fundamentally rotten at every single level going back since before we were born. It's like even when we get the results of an investigation like this, it's like pretty disheartening.
Yeah, it is. And it's partnering with your abuser. These consent decree, oh, we're going into business with the very people who couldn't get it right deliberately in the first place. Why not sign a presidential order that takes away any of their money? They're getting federal dollars. Take away their money. Replace them with, if you must, something that has more oversight from the administration. And some would say, oh, well, this is a takeover. It's not really. It's not really. And I think that the people who live there should understand that there could be a sea change, an administration change. And like you said, just like the one before, here we go again. It's the system itself that is designed to attack those who are most vulnerable.
Yeah, and you also wonder, so they'll identify the people that did these individual things. And in a moment, we're gonna launch into one or two of them. And then who will remain? Like one would hope, well, the good cops, I guess, or people who, you know, maybe they'll lose some of their coworkers that they have experience with, but you know, they take pride in being cops, so they want the police to be the best that they can be. No, that's not what it is. Like, they leave behind people who are incredibly resentful of how rude it was that you would look into their behavior. People who want this stuff to continue. They may not pop up in this reporting or whatever, but they don't have an actual problem with it. And this is why even when we fight so hard to move the population and the population to get the right sorts of population or politicians elected to, for instance, launch new gun regulations or something like that, some sort of gun control. And then the police in multiple states are just like, no, we're not gonna do that. And who is the oversight body on that? Mm-hmm. Maybe Merrick Garland launches an investigation that 3 years later is like, well, it turns out that they were refusing to do what they were constitutionally bound to do. Great, that's awesome. And so again, it just gets to, like, I am the last person to give you a solution to this problem. I have no idea, but it is just such a deep problem. And it is not just about police training or particular outcomes of, you know, when they go out there, it's the culture of policing, it's the training, it's the police unions, it's the politicians who are protecting them, the relationships that they have with, you know, with prosecutors and all that. It's just such a deep foundational issue.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we just saw it in the Nichols case, right? You had a black police chief who surely had direct communication with a mayor about bringing crime down. And I'll close my eyes and put blinders on to the way in which you do it. And a man who was just trying to get a few feet to his mother's house is beaten to death. So, and you know who else is left behind, John? Who's left behind are the people who look the other way. You want to talk about, oh, just a few bad apples. What about, you have to win the hearts and minds. That's like on any job. You know, you have most of the people in the middle, then some real leadership, and then you have people over here who mean no good. There's a war for who's going to win the room. And it's like that in police departments and cities. And so there's got to be a greater initiative, a greater way to use perhaps people and how they perform and what they believe and change hearts and minds. Now, you said it's a heavy lift. to reform police. I don't know how you do that, okay? I don't know how you win hearts and minds of people who have privilege and who have always gotten away with it or who look the other way. But that's what needs to be done here. They're not gonna take them by force.
Yeah. Yeah, again, super complicated. I'm not the answer, but yeah, it needs to be discussed. It needs to be talked about. And so this is an opportunity. This will launch a little bit of news coverage today. Maybe there'll be a segment tomorrow. And then hopefully it'll have affected some people's opinions, because after that, you probably won't hear that much from it. But I want to focus a little bit on some of what was found. So Sharon alluded to this. Louisville Metro police officer unleashes police dog on a 14-year-old black boy who was spotted lying on the ground, leading to severe injuries and hospitalization. According to the report, the officer was leading his dog to search for a person suspected of a home invasion. After searching for several minutes, the officer saw the teenager lying on the ground, face down in the grass. So obviously, an immediate deadly threat. Immediately after noticing the teen, the officer deployed his dog off leash without giving any warning and ordered the dog to bite the teen at least 7 times. This is a 14-year-old boy who was laying face down in grass. During the encounter, the teen remained prone, pleaded, "Okay, okay, help, get the dog, please," as the officer continued to stand over him and shout orders for about 30 seconds while the dog was chewing on his arm. At one point, the officer shouted, "Stop fighting my dog," despite video showing that that was not happening. The teen suffered severe injuries on his arm and back and was admitted to a children's hospital. So protect and serve indeed. In another case, a report indicated that another police dog incident, there was the DOJ, they said officers found a white man lying face up on his back in his boxers with his hands up. Again, a defensive position, if anything, not aggressive. The man tried to comply with the officer's orders while the dog continued to bite his foot for nearly a minute. And I don't know if you've ever been bitten by a dog out there in the audience, like even just a bite that happens and moves on. I've never had a dog chew on my body for a second, let alone a minute. But I imagine that that's pretty horrific. Horrific is the emotional response that I would have. Not everyone would have that. Apparently these cops thought it was perfectly acceptable because they stood there watching as a person was chewed on for a minute by a dog trained to potentially kill people. Sharon, what do you think?
I think I want to know everybody who watched it. I want everyone who watched it identified, not just the monster who unleashed it. And then I want to know what supervisors, if any, saw the footage. And I also want to know if the footage was in black and white, because it takes me back decades. You know, I'm thinking things that John Lewis, may he rest, marched for. That's really what we're talking about here, okay? Let me attack you, let me beat you, let me have a dog chew on your foot, and then complain that you're not complying. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, utterly ridiculous. So those are a couple of the specifics. We want to talk a little bit about some of the broader conclusions. They say in this report, for years, LMPD has practiced an aggressive style of policing that it deploys selectively, especially against black people, but also against vulnerable people throughout the city. LMPD cites people for minor offenses like wide turns and broken taillights, while serious crimes like sexual assault and homicide go unsolved. They're too busy looking at the broken taillights, I guess, or maybe those are just the easy ones. And the murder and stuff, that's just difficult. Who has the time? Also, political bias was baked into LMPD. One July 2018 department document said the extremist 3%ers group believe law enforcement has been handcuffed by politics and want to help us do what they think is right. They adopted the 3%ers description of themselves as patriotic citizens who love their country, their freedoms, and their liberty. I would love to know exactly how they define their, because I feel like that includes some people, but very much does not include other people. And so they also routinely violated the rights of people engaging in protected political speech, particularly when that speech was critical of law enforcement. They would be targeted and abused by police. And as of right now, the city has apparently reached an agreement in principle to resolve the constitutional violations found by the DOJ investigation. So, Sharon, problem solved, I assume.
Yeah, I want to know if these 3%ers came to work in red hats and if they all asked off on January 6th. Did they get vacation leave on January 6th? Again, ridiculous. And when you talk about keeping a community safe while you're going after taillights and racial profiling people, you are letting those sexual assault, unsolved crimes, issues that actually do affect greater society go unsolved. You know, as a journalist in newsrooms for years, they would have racial profiling. They'd take the police report and suddenly it would end up in the teleprompter. And I would never read it, okay? Because what you're also doing, it didn't just offend me as a black person. It offended me because you're not helping anyone. While you're going after every black person, okay, with braids, the person who actually perpetrated the crime is going free. So I have many questions here, and I don't know that Merrick Garland's efforts here, perhaps noble, are going to make a difference, greater society globally. And I think that's the rub. We know as we sit here, and it doesn't matter what you achieve economically, greater heights you go to, when you are a certain segment of society, these announcements come and you know things aren't gonna get better for us. And that's the problem here.
Well, I think, like, to your point, like specifically about how they're not gonna care to track down, for instance, you know, the perpetrator of sexual assault. That's the sexual assaults that actually get reported. But if you've been living in this place where there is so much bias and targeting of segments of the population, are you as likely to even bother reporting it in this place when you have very little reason to believe throughout your life that they're gonna have your back, that they're gonna take it seriously, that they're gonna give you a fair shake in terms of investigation? I assume that the horrific numbers for how the percentage that are solved of those is actually an undercount, because I have a feeling people don't want to even engage with the system.
Yeah, particularly, I think you're right, particularly when you left out one thing, or they're gonna flip the script on you and see, yeah, let maybe. Me search your house, let me see what's going on. What are you doing? You know,
yeah.
And why are you calling us? You must be up to something, because that's an experience too that happens all too often.
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's Louisville, and I wish I could say that that's the only terrible look into policing that we got in the last 24 hours, but it's not. We have more. And so let's talk about this. There have now been indictments against 11 former and current officers, some of whom were already facing charges in East Cleveland as a result of an investigation into bias, again, in targeting by the police, as well as persistent abuse and violence. We're not gonna show you all of what was revealed in the last day, but I do wanna just show you one clip, an indication, I think just a window into how some of these cops see their role in society. Take a look at this. What are you supposed to do with police? Every single second of that was, I understand, they woke up and they put on a uniform and they had a shiny badge and they're legally allowed to carry a gun. None of that matters. We know exactly who that type of person is. Just so eager to beat the hell out of someone that comes up on a person who's literally lying on the ground, poses absolutely zero threat, and then delights on beating them. It is the same exact thing as if they had just poured out of the back of a Chevy pickup truck to jump someone that they came across after an incident at a bar. It is exactly the same thing, delighting in doling out violence against someone who can't defend themselves, that is posing absolutely no threat, then chuckling about it, so happy to have beaten someone, and then lying to each other, shouldn't have resisted, there was no resisting. There was literally no resistance whatsoever, and you know it. And that was just one of many bits of video revealed by, this is Michael O'Malley, prosecutor for the county there. Sharon, what do you think?
I think that these were gangs, that's what it's called. This is organized crime. Let's be clear again about the term here, organized violent crime on the streets of East Cleveland. And I worked in Cleveland for many years, so I'm familiar with the goings on there, and nothing's changed. And for the city council in East Cleveland to now step before the mic, John, and beg, they're begging, help us. We only have 20 active police officers. Listen, it might be a good thing for the citizens of East Cleveland. They might be a little bit safer today. I can say that based on what you just showed and the numbers indicted, okay? Because you talked about rape victims not wanting to come forward, sexual assault. This is all we know. What about what we don't know here? I think there's a lot more to uncover.
You know what I think of when I see things like that? Like, I see a video like that and I immediately get like so down. Like, again, how do you reform a system like this? And how do you live in a country where a significant percentage of regular people out there don't care that this is happening at all because they believe that it won't affect them or the sort of person that they are? You know, how do you reform something like this when we cannot come together as a society to at least admit that it's a problem? But then I think, you know, like when they'll talk about deploying like robots for law enforcement, like San Francisco or something. LAPD is apparently getting like a robot dog. And there's a lot of concerns about that. But one is, so what about the programming of it? Who's programming these things? What sorts of biases are they putting into the software? And we get concerned about that, and rightfully so. But then I think it's easy to do that with a robot. Are we any better? Mm-hmm. Who programmed that cop that you heard yelling, get his ass? Who boy? Who programmed him? What was being fed into his programming as he was growing up socially, like in terms of the news coverage, political commentary, the things he was hearing in his everyday life? Because it produced something that was pretty sick, as bad as I can imagine any robot doing. It would be very difficult to get a robot to do what you just saw in that video. And yet American society programs an endless stream of young, angry, almost always, but not always. Sometimes there's diversity in police brutality, but often young white male cops who are ready to just get into a gang, a literal one, the sort of one that you're talking about, or even just a group of guys pouring out of a squad car to beat the hell out of someone who can't defend themselves. I'm worried about their programming too.
Yeah, and it's the color blue. That's their gang color. It's usually dark blue, okay? And they carry the same issued weapons. I think we need to show more of the underbelly here, because you're so right about the media. I get it. We shape hearts and minds, okay? I fought that fight in newsrooms every single day. Who's in the little room that decides what we're gonna cover? Who decides what we're not gonna cover? Oh, well, that's just a drug crime code for it. Black people killed, move on. Let's go out to Cobb County in the suburbs. Let's do things that white people care about. That's what you're really saying. And you reinforce, no matter the color, how people feel about themselves, how they believe their promises in America, where it ends, okay? Some people it's just beginning, other places it ends before you even leave the neighborhood block, okay? So you're right, America, this is your prescription and it's written to all of us. And the only way to unpack it is perhaps to throw out the system. Stop saying things like, well, defund the police is too far. Let's unpack what it really means. Let's start over. Let's learn the history of policing in America, because you cannot move forward until you know where you've been.
It's a great final point. I'm gonna leave it there. I'm glad that we've gotten these looks into the police, and glad that, you know, some of these cops are gonna be, you know, charged or whatever. We'll see what ends up happening to them. But it's just, again, it's like it's choosing a few to identify, but then what are we left with? So in any event, we're gonna take our first break. We come back, we're gonna jump to the continued fallout from the revelations from the Dominion versus Fox News lawsuit. Come right back. Funny big bull dragon. Anyway, lots more news to come. If you're just joining us now, please hit the like buttons. Everybody knows we're live. And if you are new to the stream, reminder, presidential contender Marianne Williamson will be joining us at the beginning of the aftermath. So everybody get ready for that. If you have a particularly insightful question for the candidate, send it in to us. Maybe we'll ask. And maybe if it's good enough, you might get a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So we'll have to see. In any event, why don't we jump into this? Regular employees at Fox are apparently reeling from the 1-2 blows to their reputation or credibility, such as it was at Fox News, from the Dominion versus Fox News court case, as well as Tucker Carlson's absolutely pathetic attempt to propagandize about the insurrection. The Daily Beast has talked to a number of current employees at Fox. They've got 9 staffers and insiders that say that the defamation lawsuit is further impugning and sullying the reputation of the network's, quote, and I'm doing, like, you know, Trump always puts air quotes around stuff that doesn't need it. I would like to put multiple layers of air quotes and exponents around straight news journalists. Yeah, that's what they have at Fox News, straight news journalists. Anyway, especially since they show Fox was operating out of fear of losing viewers to smaller right-wing competitors. Yeah, I can see how that could hurt. Here's what a few of them said. I think no regular person could read this and look at Fox like a news organization at this point. Yeah, at this point. We are not happy. I wouldn't be. It's just a really bad time to be working here. It's not like the glory days of Glenn Beck's anti-Semitic screeds on a blackboard or O'Reilly's nightly casual racism. Those were good times, but now I'm not happy. Anyway, we're gonna get into some of the specifics, but Sharon, I know obviously you've worked in newsrooms. I'm sure there are some people who have some attachment to journalistic ethics there, I guess. What do you think about the position they find themselves in?
And those people probably work in the lunchroom, okay? They got a problem there. They got a huge problem, and the whole foundation is gonna cause a collapse here. We may be close. I know people have talked about the demise of Fox News for probably better part of a decade, but this could really happen. And I think that it is rich. And listen, people have to work. They wanna take care of their families. They've honed the craft. They've worked hard to get there. And so I don't want to dismiss it by saying, well, how could you work someplace like that? But we all have, you know, that final thing where you have to say, I'm going this way or that way, okay? If you stay, you have to dismiss a good portion of your soul. You just have to, okay? I'd be rich if I learned how to shut up, okay? I couldn't shut up enough, John. So I don't know what to tell you, except that I don't understand why Fox, who is an entertainment company, Fox News, is still in the White House briefing room, you know, the press room, unless Comedy Central also has a pass there. Do they have a daily pass? They should, right? Because you're just spewing out things. At least Comedy Central, I find the commentary to be rich, funny, and built on truth a lot of times. And that's not the standard at Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, quote unquote comedy shows, like if they deserve one, John Oliver should have 10 people in the White House correspondence room. He does actual investigative reporting.
So
anyway, it's ridiculous. And again, I am sure there are one or two people who, young people, you know, who are right wing, but serious, I guess. You got some growing up to do because you don't know what movement you're a part of. You don't know who's in that room with you because they're insane. It's all a grift. It's all deranged. That's actually what it is. They don't care about what's real. They care about what will get them eyeballs and keep those eyeballs there and maintain the economic status quo. That's what they're interested in. Anyway, some of the specifics, things that I am sure are bothering some of these people. Hannity and Steve Doocy were caught on text mocking Fox's journalists. In a series of texts from November 2020, Hannity and Doocy attacked the reporting from their colleagues on the so-called straight news side of the network. News destroyed us, Hannity complained. Every day, Doocy replied. You don't PO the base, Hannity said. They don't care. They're journalists, Doocy texted back. And that is like, that is amazing. They're journalists. They think we need to like report on facts and tell the truth. That is I'm not saying that like I have a ton of respect for people who still linger there that once believed that journalism was a real thing, but like once you find out that's how they're talking about you, you gotta go. Let alone Kristen Fisher, White House correspondent, was punished by her boss for debunking a crazy press conference by Rudy Giuliani's Sidney Powell, which again, we know every one of the hosts thought that both of those people were cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but she had to be punished, saying that she needed to do a better job of respecting our audience. Man, respect comes in so many different forms. Bill Salmon, managing editor for Washington, who oversaw the decision desk, was on a call, says, if I may defend the decision desk for a moment, they got all 50 states right. We called Arizona, it was a good call, it held up. They did, every one of their calls was accurate. And do you know what happened to him as a result of it? He was fired because he defended their accurate calls. They got rid of him. Chris Steierwalt, political editor tasked with defending the Arizona call on air, was also let go. They were right and they lost their jobs for it. So the incentive structure at Fox is, it's like the Mad Hatter's tea service over there. Anyway, Sharon, what do you think?
Oh, well, I just, again, now I'm picturing the lunchroom and I wonder, do Tucker, Hannity, Laura Ingraham, like they sit at the cool table, and then like Bret Baier, he probably is not gonna be at their table, depends on the day, you know, but he's probably not gonna be there. And they might be mocked and they might get less than in their little a la carte line. It's just stunning. You know, the decision desk gentleman that you mentioned didn't understand the mission. They put you on the decision desk, but they didn't really want you to call these correctly. You were supposed to wait for that other phone to ring and we'll tell you what to say. And when they didn't do that or didn't understand the explicit mission, you're out of there. At least they can look out the window to those young journalists, John. Yeah, they need to step outside, take a deep breath, see it's a big world out there. And you might want to go work someplace where people perhaps don't think the way you do, just so that you can get some context, just some light context.
Yeah, they on the call, I forget who said it, but on one of the text messages that was revealed, they said, we should have waited a few days. And that way our base would still have the mystery to go on.
Wow.
Which is amazing. Like you hide the truth for mystery in a docuseries or whatever. So on the last episode, you don't reveal the whole true crime thing on the first episode or whatever. You know what, if I at the beginning of an episode of the Jammers Report tease a story later, that's preserving the mystery. Your news, if you know the answer, you say the answer. That's how that's supposed to work. You don't maintain ignorance so they'll still love you. That's not how journalism is supposed to work. Anyway.
It's entertainment. I forget it's
exactly.
Entertainment.
It's not journalism. Yeah. It's politics entertainment. That's all it is. Let's turn to a related issue. Tucker Carlson potentially finds himself in a little bit of an issue because it has been repeatedly demonstrated that he not only despises Donald Trump, but he despises the people who love Donald Trump. In fact, there's a great article up right now at the New York Times. 5 times Tucker Carlson privately reviled Trump. So this is not one text message, this is not one conversation. Over and over and over again, he makes clear that what he pretends to believe in public means nothing to him. He's lying. In these quotes, some of which we've already shown you, he attacks Trump's political strategy, his effect on the Republican Party, his business history, says he's failed in every business he's ever started, him not going to the inauguration. And he is overall desperate for Trump to lose power over the GOP, which if you're a MAGA person, is the last thing you want. Well, that is the goal of Tucker Carlson. However, Tucker Carlson really, really likes being rich. And he doesn't have any other monetizable skills. He needs to maintain his audience. And so the work of trying to get his reputation back has already begun. Take a look at these sots from last night with Tucker Carlson sucking up to Donald Trump.
You wouldn't know it from watching the news media, but Donald Trump is running for president again. They don't put him in prison first, which is of course their plan. And he's saying things that are really interesting, not rehashes at all. In fact, he's come out with a bunch of proposals that were so interesting that we thought that we would bring them to you. More babies, prettier buildings, cleaner parks. Those are achievable goals, ones that would improve everyone's life.
Hates having to say these things. It wasn't like, hey Tucker, give me a spontaneous, extemporaneous 5 minutes on how great Trump is to save your reputation. They wrote that for him. He was reading off a teleprompter and it was still dripping with disdain and boredom and frustration, having to pretend that Donald Trump has come up with interesting ideas. So interesting that we have to highlight them suspiciously after I've been revealed to be a complete fraud. Sharon, what do you think?
And what does that say about what's his face down at Mar-a-Lago? That you would even, I don't want you to be my friend if this is how you really feel. But it's not about that for him, okay? Because there's something else going on there. I've never sold drugs, but I often wonder, and just this is where I'm going with this. If I did, you know, let's say I have this great need, I just need this money, but I'm going to sell drugs. Isn't there an exit strategy? You mentioned Tucker Carlson and he likes money. How much money do you need before you exit to the real world and try to regain some credibility here? How much do you need that? This is America. You can always rebrand yourself. You can always find another way. How much do you need?
I think the specific amount that they need is more. More of it. Yeah.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
That's it. And in terms of being able to like regain respectability, it should at this point, I think, be impossible. But we know what the mainstream media is like. They were a couple of years ago writing glossy things about Tucker Carlson being, he thinks differently than other right wingers and all that. He's Alex Jones.
Yeah,
that
he is.
Happens to be the heir to a fortune. That's all he is. Mm-hmm. He's a white supremacist. He is, whether he truly deep in his heart believes the insane things that he says is almost irrelevant. First of all, I believe that he believes at least a version of it. I don't know if he's as racist as he wants you to believe that he is, but he's definitely a racist. At a certain point, you can't pretend to be a Nazi for so long without the difference between you and a Nazi not really meaning much. But in any event, they might be willing to launder his reputation if he eventually gets booted from Fox and starts up a podcast. He's going to be doing interviews and asking independent questions and stuff like that. It's not impossible. Anyway, we're running so low on time. I think we're going to have to save this other sot for another show, unfortunately, because we got to move on to this last topic for right now. So let's jump into this. Jenna Ellis continues to make news. Don't worry, this time it's not getting COVID from Rudy Giuliani farting on her. No, it's she had to actually admit in court that many of the things that she said in the wake of the 2020 election were absolute massive lies. And so this is accompanied with her being censured. Good to see some consequences for people involved in the big lie. Here are a few of the claims that Jenna Ellis made that she has had to retract. She claimed on November 13th of 2020 that Hillary Clinton didn't concede the 2016 election. Well, who's to say? I mean, it had only happened 4 years earlier. Anyway, on November 20th of that year, Ellis claimed that Trump's team had evidence of a quote, coordinated effort in all of these states to transfer votes either from Trump to Biden, to manipulate the ballots, to count them in secret. None of that was true. She claimed later that month that Trump won in a landslide. That's not how winning or landslides work. And on December 5th, she claimed that Trump's team found 500,000 illegal votes that had been cast in Arizona, which considering the narrow margin there, certainly would have been news if it had been found. Weirdly, they didn't turn up. So all of this was a lie. They were fake. She was doing this to continue to get money from Trump to legally defend him, to raise her profile, to get on the news. And this is what this sort of censure is for. If you are representing like the legal field, you're supposed to have some level of reliability to the statements you make on air, but especially in court. And she and Rudy Giuliani were knowingly lying about incredibly consequential things in court. Rudy Giuliani lost his ability to practice law, at least in one state. We're gonna see long term what happens to Jenna Ellis, but Sharon, what do you think of what we've seen so far?
Charlatan is that's the word that comes to mind. I think this woman and her lip gloss and her lies need to just go away for a while. Just sit down and go away. Who is following her? Who would still want her to represent them, take them on? Who would book her? Who's booking her? Is anyone booking her except to laugh at? She's a disaster and she represents disaster. I mean, I don't know what other, you know, adjectives to put in there, but she just is a total mess and not enough has happened to strip her of any ability to do her charlatan game.
Yeah.
Not enough.
Yeah, I don't know who would be booking her. I'm assuming like Steve Bannon, maybe Mike Lindell. I don't know. But to be fair,
Bannon, I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Here's a statement she put out after this. The politically motivated left failed miserably in their attempt to destroy me. They're now trying to falsely discredit me by saying I admitted I lied. That is false. I would never lie, which is a lie. Lying requires intentionally making a false statement. I never did that. No, instead, I was so terribly incompetent at my job, so disconnected from reality and unable to discern truth from falsity that I unknowingly lied about incredibly consequential things over and over and over again. What a defense, Jenna Ellis, that you're so incompetent that you can't tell what's true. But of course, that's just my reaction to the pretend defense that she has here. No, she lied. She lied and she had to admit that she lied. That's actually how this works. And honestly, I would love to see if there's some consequences of her agreeing to this legal proceeding, having to admit that these are lies, and then going out and saying that she didn't admit it. Feels like that undercuts the process. Feels like they might want to revisit that. I'm not a lawyer, bear that in mind, but it kind of seems like it's see-through and pathetic. It's a reminder, by the way, that one of the things that makes grift so hard to fight is that the grifters are acquiring an audience of people chosen because they can't exercise critical thought. And so even when it's proven that the grifter is lying, even when they admit that they're lying, as she and Tucker Carlson and all the others have, they can still just then go back to their audience and be like, oh, but it doesn't mean what it seems like it means. You can still trust me. And these people often will still trust them. It's pretty sad, Sharon.
Yeah, it is. And I remember some people who thought they were going to hitch a ride on the Hale Bop. That was a few years ago. Remember that story? You remember that? They were good people, most of them, who thought that they were going to hitch a ride on the Hale Bop and everything was going to work out. It's not going to work out. My question is, are her and like you said, this doesn't have any teeth, but does she and Rudy Giuliani, do they speak anymore? Are they on a party line somewhere with others who have been disgraced? I too think that if you can just go out and say what just happened didn't happen, it does need more teeth. It needs more teeth.
Yeah, and really my I know she says in her message, like the left wants to destroy me. Man, I can't tell you how long I go between having to think about Jenna Ellis. I don't give a damn about her for the most
part. Nobody cares.
Yeah, what I care about is that we need to be better. Like, Jenna Ellis can exist. Tucker Carlson can exist. Ben Shapiro can exist because there are a bunch of us who just want to be told that what we already believe is true and that we're awesome and we're superior and we're pure. And I don't care if it's obvious that you're lying to me. I just desperately want to hear those things. And that desperation breeds grift. It breeds this corrupt, dishonest media and politicians now. And I understand that when I say we need to be better, there's some major differences between the people watching this video and the people that we're talking about. We have no control over them. We don't necessarily even know many of them necessarily, but I just wish that we could be better. Alex Jones, nobody can stop Alex Jones from turning on a camera and barking at it. But ideally, there would be nobody watching it. That would be great, that crazy people can say crazy things, crazy, hateful, hurtful things, but there would be no audience for it. You know, Andrew Tate can exist. No one should want to watch him. And that's a big ask, like with reforming the police, but I would love to get there. Okay, with that said, we are running late in the hour. We're gonna go to our last break. We come back though, Cori Bush has to try to teach Lauren Boebert a little bit about how words work and what they mean. We'll have that for you after this. By the way, I just saw Wheelie Snarky's Dragon for Marianne Williamson about the Department of Transportation. I'm gonna be looking that over before our interview and we'll see, hopefully we'll be able to get to it. Okay, with that said, let's jump into one of my favorite videos of the last day. Let's start with this.
My Republican colleagues have unironically invited for-profit think tank and oil titans whose expertise is in maximizing profits, especially at the expense of our Black, our Brown, and our Indigenous neighbors' health, safety, and well-being. One of these so-called energy experts is a philosopher who has previously espoused white supremacist views.
That's Representative Bush talking about this House hearing on the US Strategic Petroleum Reserve, one of an endless stream of investigations by the right. They're angry at Joe Biden for briefly tapping into it, as presidents often do to drive down the price of oil. In any event, Cori Bush, Representative Bush, had an issue with Republicans bringing in someone like Center for Industrial Progress President Alex Epstein after he, in her words, espoused white supremacist views. And Representative Lauren Boebert did not like that. Incendiary language. How dare you accuse him of this? Take a look at what she had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like a parliamentary inquiry into taking down the gentlelady's words, the ranking member's words, for insinuating that our witness made white supremacist statements using his words.
Okay. Okay. The chair cannot take down words that are directed toward a witness, only to other members.
Okay, I also can't take down words, but I can respond to them and define them. Lauren Boebert, it's white supremacist, not supremacist. I don't want to be pedantic, but if you're going to assert that you're from a superior race, you could probably master the language that race likes to claim is the best. In any event, Representative Bush is being called out here. She's claimed that these were white supremacist comments. So here she is actually reading what this guy said.
As I was saying, the African and African American Studies Department, this is the quote, has 23 classes. In many of these classes, African culture is presented not as inferior to Western culture, but as on equal footing with it. In other departments, the same is done with Latin American, Indian, and American Indian culture, end quote. When confronted about these views over two decades later, rather than disavow them, he doubled down on this narrative saying, quote, "It has nothing to do with skin color. I was arguing that those cultures overall are inferior to Western culture." We are not inferior to any culture, speaking as a descendant of one of those cultures.
Sharon, what do you make of that?
This is what we're arguing about. For Lauren Boebert to, and you're right, she got it wrong, but to stand up and defend anyone, this is who you're defending? This is who you're defending, someone who believes that Latinas, blacks are less than, okay? Because everybody knows that Europeans saved the world and made everyone civilized and gave people religion. End of story. There's nothing else to learn here. I don't know why Cori Bush even quoted African American studies. I don't know why she uttered that word, because that's a trigger too for people like Lauren Boebert. They don't even want that to exist, okay? It doesn't, I don't think, in Florida anymore. The whole thing is ridiculous to just stand up so boldly, and she's so loud with it, and to be so wrong and lack so much education. It's silly.
Yeah, she either had no idea what the words were, or she knew and thought that Representative Bush wouldn't have them available to read, or she thought that, well, obviously the guy's smart, he's a CEO, whatever racist thing he said, he used enough weaseliness that we could like imply that it wasn't white supremacist. But he literally said these societies are inferior to white society, which is the exact same thing as saying white society is superior. It's like, it's not like he's making a comment, it's like he's defining what white supremacy is with his comments. And so I am very glad that we had a Representative Bush there to respond to it, that she prepared as well as she did to rebut what Lauren Boebert said. None of her base is gonna care. She can, you know, humiliate herself on a daily basis, and she's gonna be just fine in their eyes. But I love to see her embarrassed by people like Representative Bush.
Is she capable of being embarrassed? I'd like to know, after Representative Bush read the receipts, if then Lauren Boebert just said, you know, I went back to what she was doing, or did she have a final comment? But like you said, it won't matter. Her flock will keep following.
Yeah, 100%. Like her, I mean, where is this even going to rank in embarrassments? Like, she's perfectly fine with her husband having flashed little girls in a you know, a bowling alley, and you know, leading to a bout of explosive diarrhea from the terrible hygiene of a restaurant. I have a feeling she'll be fine with this.
This is a 3. I think this is a 3 out of 10. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.